Hello, beloved listeners. This is Adrienne Marie Brown, writer of stories and songs, emergent strategist, pleasure activist, and witchy student living on the land of the Shikori, Skarure, Tuscarora, Eno, Lumbee, and other indigenous peoples. And this is How to Survive the End of the World, our podcast about learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. When I say our, of course, I'm including my co-host, a sister Autumn, who's currently on sabbatical. So in her absence, while I'm missing her and playing her music nonstop, we're going full witch, and we've been in witch school this season. So we're honoring the book Fables and Spells, and I'm having conversations with teachers, witches, healers, and reading you bits and pieces from the book. When I say witch, what I mostly mean is people who work with elements of the natural world, including human nature, to generate more possibilities. And this season, we've learned about so many kinds of witching, and there's even more. You know, I feel like we just touched the surface, really, of a deep, deep world. I hope that you've been really excited about it. I've been really geeked out, and I've been learning a lot. As a reminder, we don't have any sponsors. There's no ads. There's no funders. We are listener supported. So if you are not yet part of our Patreon crew, you can go to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow and become a subscriber there, become a patron. So I'm really honored today to have my guest here. And we have been in conversation for years, it feels like, going back and forth, trying to find the time for a conversation. So I'm here with Wambui. Is it Juguna?
Perfect. You said
okay.
It. Perfect.
Yay! And Wambui is a yoga teacher, is I think the primary work you do. You're an energy healer. You are all kinds of educator. And we've been trying to be in touch with each other about emergent strategy, yoga, like some kind of collaboration there. And it's kept like being like, okay, not this year, not quite yet, not quite here, but there's something. And you actually reached out to me about being on your podcast, which definitely we're going to do. We'll figure out a time for it. But then I was like, well, I could have you on mine as part of this season. And here we are. And I'm really excited. We finally found our first conversation, Wambui.
Hey, I am thrilled to bits, Adrienne. You don't even know. I'm trying to hold it together, but I'm like,
I'm like, here we are. How are you right now today?
Right now today, I am well. Like I said, I was super excited that today's the day I get to connect with Adrienne and talk all things witchy and wonderful. And like we were talking just before we did the thing, you know, I'm in Miami Beach just having a month of my own to just be in my energy, having given almost 10 years, you know, to doing the mother witch thing. So I get to switch lanes a little bit and remember, you know, my own magic. So I'm nourished and just so grateful we can be in conversation together.
Oh, how beautiful. Thank you for that. I have been using the language of witch for this season. You know, I felt like heading into it, it felt like a broad enough container inside of which a lot of things could be explored. And some of those things have felt like real stretches. Some have felt like, oh yeah, this is totally making sense. So how do you identify the work that you do? Do you use the language of witch? Do you use other language for it? What are you up to?
Yes, I was so happy, first of all, when I got the email from you and your team around the topic, because I was like, I have been wanting to have a conversation around witchy things and witchy work and all the things I do. I proudly, you know, can label myself as a witch and the work I do as witchy. And in fact, Sally Kempton, a beloved meditation teacher, she's transitioned now. She's no more with us on this realm. I emailed her a couple years back to be like, you know, our yoga practitioners, yoga seekers, witches. Can witches do yoga? And she came back with a very long, very thorough answer, which basically said, yeah, girl, you're good.
Yeah, you're
fine. I don't remember the exact specifics, like not all yogis are witches or not all witches are yogis, but essentially it was just like, there is a parallel, there is, you know, so you're good. So I was like, oh, fine, I'm going to run with it. And, you know, so yeah, I think the work I do, and if you think of, you know, the yoga as it's primarily practiced in the West, obviously the physical aspect, the asana is kind of what's really known. I mean,
yeah,
doing essentially is you're using your physical body, the material of your physical matter on this plane, and you're working with energy and you're shifting the elements of nature that make up who you are. You're working with that. So as within, so without, the macro and the microcosms, you know, the body, your bones, your fat, your flesh, that's earth element. You have the water, the fluids, the blood, the tears, the salt water, you know, there it goes. The digestive fire, you know, that's the fire, the transformation, your sweat, the heat, the lack of heat, you know, in your extremities when you get cold. It shows that we are so elemental.
Yes.
And then what to say of air and the very breath of life that is under your nostrils. So if that's not magic, I don't know what is.
Yeah. I mean, I love hearing you speak about it, because I do feel like there have been these moments of aha for me on a yoga mat. There have been these moments of aha in my body, both during yoga and during Pilates, where I felt like, oh, I just made the most subtle shift. And everything has changed. Like my body is firing up, or my body is releasing, or, you know, and I'm just like, oh, you could spend a whole lifetime just in the study of the subtle magics of the body and not so subtle magics of the body. So absolutely. I love that answer.
Absolutely. I mean, as you speak, I feel chills going up and down my spine. So to say that, you know, the somatic experience of being alive in the body is not magic, you know, I just don't know what it is. But it's, and you said it in an Instagram post, I think you posted around New Year's. It's the
miraculous mundane.
I love that. And that's exactly what we're doing when we're practicing yoga. It's really the meeting of the practicalities of life, you know, as a householder, so to speak, rather than a renunciate going out to the cave and just, you know, committing to the internal path within. You know, as a householder, we are interacting with life, with family members, relationships, work, making money, paying bills, all that. So you have the practicalities of what it means to be a human interacting in society, but then you have the meeting of this mystical, divine, you know, cosmic experience of what it means as well to be part of the manifestation. And so that's, I feel yoga is that technology, is that art, is that science of the intersections, of the crossroads.
I love that. You know, it's so important to, I think, having this conversation in the context of witchiness, because for me, I have felt like there's a way that people can turn to yoga and towards the realm of wellness to bypass, you know, to spiritually bypass what's happening. And I feel like it's a mispractice, right? Like I'm like, oh, when I'm truly practicing, there's no bypassing possible. I am so present. I'm so in it. And in it, I can feel the cosmic. I can feel the mundane, the material. I can feel the wholeness. The wholeness is actually the thing. And from within feeling the wholeness, there's always right action to take. There's even if it's stillness, right? But there's something available. And so, you know, I get very excited for people who are like making that connection of, oh yeah, this is an active spell casting, future shaping practice, right?
Absolutely.
So let's go back a little bit. When did you realize that you were drawn to witchy work? When did you realize you were drawn to creating change in this way?
I mean, I think for me, it's just been a remembering my magic when I was a little girl, you know, with the imagination and just the spell casting that I used to do just in the in the season of childhood and play and magic and imagination. And obviously that gets indoctrinated out of one as you learn how to navigate, you know, these structures and systems and begin to take on external definitions of success and what it means to be a person in the world. So I think it's just been a remembering remembering my magic and remembering, you know, what I forgot as I grew older and became more obedient and aligned to surviving these structures of you know, dominion and essentially forgetting, you know.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That what we know. So formally, I began yoga when I was studying dance in high school, modern dance. I was at a very rigorous professional art school in North Carolina, actually North Carolina School of the Arts. And
really?
Yeah. So I was there studying modern dance, but I got injured and it wasn't vibing with me. It wasn't vibing with me. And so I saw a flyer for like, come take yoga. And I was like, okay, sounds good. And I went and I was like, wait, you mean I can actually be in my body and not have to perform?
Yes.
An external audience. And it doesn't matter that my leg doesn't go up to here. And oh my God, is that peace I actually feel? Is that acceptance? Is that space? Is that, is that a, like a hearkening of love I can have for myself?
Oh, how beautiful.
So I was young. I was 15, 16, and I kept doing it, you know, throughout school and whatnot. But it wasn't until I was living in Abu Dhabi as a 28-year-old that it became central and part of my lifestyle. And it was at a time in my life where I had followed the script, you know, study, get higher education, get a trade, get a job, and start to make money. And I did all that. And I felt so empty and broken and destroyed within. And I was like, okay, Wambui, you're going to have to get it together because the relationship you have with yourself, it doesn't feel like such a good place to be in your body and in your mind. Right. So what's it going to be? So that's really when the seeds were planted and I was able to make some deep, deep, deep internal shifts.
And where were you a little girl?
I was a little girl. I was born in Nairobi, Kenya. My dad is Kikuyu and my mother is British by birth, but she's now Kenyan herself. I was born there and I moved to the US when I was 10.
Okay. Yes. And what did you move to, North Carolina?
Oh, we moved to upstate New York. So very
upstate
close to
New York.
In the Adirondack Mountains. Like talk about like
witchy. Culture shock.
I was culture shock.
Oh yeah.
I just
total
remember
witchy zone.
Oh my gosh, the first autumn with all the leaves and how beautiful.
Gosh.
That was a magical time now that I remember back. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful world, but it's been helpful for there's a part of the hurt place in me that is nourished by the medicine of the beauty of this land, right? Mm-hmm. The beauty of the cycles of this land. I'm just like, oh, right. Like for whatever else the US is up to, much of which is damaging. There's still so much beauty here. There's still so much magic and aliveness and beautiful cycles. Okay, so you're a child in Nairobi, Kenya. You grew up, you come to the US, you're in Abu Dhabi. You're like, hold on, everything must change. Like, I really want to show up fully for myself, show up fully in my life. So this is a perfect segue then, because the next question I have for you is, who are your ancestors in the lineage of your work? And is there a formal lineage that you are studying? You know, like, so, you know, I love what you described because it's that moment of internal awakening. And for me, that always comes out. It's like, okay, something internal shifts. And then I start to look out and be like, I need a teacher or I need a framework or I need, you know, like who's going to catch this inquiry that's inside my soul?
Absolutely.
Right? More aliveness, right? So who are the ancestors in the lineage of your work and what are the formal lineages that you claim for your work?
I love that question first and foremost. So I was always, so just before I answer that, I need to say that I had trouble really, practicing daily and practicing on my own at home. Like I felt yoga was, I needed to go to a teacher, I needed to go to a gym, I needed to go to a yoga studio, take the class and then come home. And I would try to do stuff at home, but you know, it was always a little haphazard. I never knew which poses to do. I could never really sit and do like a breathing practice or some kind of meditation practice. I couldn't, it couldn't stick like as a lifestyle, right? So when I was in Abu Dhabi, I had the good fortune of attending an Ashtanga yoga workshop in Dubai.
Okay.
And Ashtanga yoga, you can say a lot about it and it's all valid. However, the thing has going for it is that it's this container. It has the structure where once you learn the poses and you memorize them and commit them to your body memory and your mind, you know, you can do it anywhere, anytime, for as long as you want, for as little as you want. You have that structure, right? Yeah. There's that form. And so in that form, in that, let's say, masculine energy container, then there's a lot of room to play. Like, am I going to do sun salutations and then breathe for a while? Or am I going to do a longer practice? You know, you can really give yourself the freedom and the permission to make it your own practice. But you need that kind of, you need that structure, or I need, let me say, I needed that structure in order to have the clarity and just know what to do, like what comes next. So it doesn't haphazard and just, so that I would say is my root practice. And it's funny because I just posted on my Instagram how I don't practice in the sort of dominant paradigm as it's taught, meaning you practice 6 days a week and you do this certain structure. Like, I don't do that anymore because number one, I just, for many reasons, but still it's my container, and it really was the vehicle that allowed for this deep transformation to take place, right? So there's that, and that's what I teach and guide others in Portugal as well, where we've opened up a yoga studio in the Algarve, right?
Ah, that's amazing.
Yes. Well, La Maraud is coming in April.
I know, it's like I need to come out there too. I've got a dear friend of mine, one of my dearest, another one of my, I have a crew called the Goddess Crew that we all went to college together, and then we have kind of gone apart and lived our lives and then come back together. And one of them is obsessed with the idea of creating like a healing center in Portugal, and is always talking about Algarve. Like, they're like, Portugal is the place, everything, you know, and I'm just like, okay, I keep hearing about it. So that's so beautiful that you've actually created and started that journey.
It's beautiful. And it's new and it's fresh. And our children are still used to the, you know, they were born in Finland. They're these like Finnish kids. There's a little bit of a, let's say, learning curve that comes with the language and the culture. But, you know, there's a lot of promise. So, but speaking of lineage, I consider La Maraud as well. He's like my principal.
Yes.
He was the, you know, I had some questions, you know, 2018, 2019, 2020 about this whole spiritual bypass piece you talked about earlier, and noticing it and, you know, just, you know, living the culture of, you know, just the threads of dominant culture and how it shows up in our spiritual and wellness spaces and who's there, who's not there. Can I show up in the fullness of who I am, or do I have to perform, you know, my beingness, you know what I mean? So I began to find seek teachers who brought identity, who brought social location, who brought the peace around collective liberation, who brought the grief, who brought the rage. You know, I needed folks to show me, you know, that it was okay to show up as I am. So yeah, La Maraud Owens was a huge, has been a huge influence in my life, especially when we're talking around how to show up in the full authenticity of who you are, especially around identity, politics, how to work with rage, how to work with grief. Michelle C. Johnson also was another really huge influence for me in the beginning, where she's like, you know, I'm just noticing how, number one, dominant culture shows up in the spaces. Number two, there's no container to talk about these spaces truthfully and compassionately, you know, keeping right relationship in mind. there's a whole lot of spiritual bypass going on. Do you not notice the way in which suffering is showing up in these spaces and how it's connected to the suffering that's showing up in the outer world? You know, whatever's happening in terms of genocide and people not getting what they need to be well. And how come we can't have the conversation there when we're talking about, you know, examining the nature of suffering and liberation, right? Mm-hmm. So seeking out, essentially Black American yoga teachers, Black American Buddhist teachers that really, really, and I was living in Finland at the time, right? So very white, homogenous environment, not many Black folk and not many Black folk who are interested in things that are witchy and spiritual and, or at least I was having a hard time connecting with them, right? Like not meeting them in a way that was, that felt like super held in community. So I went deep with Lama Rod, especially in 2020. I remember those early, early days of COVID when everything was shut down and he was there, you know, on his original Instagram, you know, doing the Tara practices, doing the breathing, the somatic. And I was just like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna ride with you. This is he represented a lamp in the darkness and anchor. And I was like, all right, Lama, let's do this.
That makes me so happy, actually. Like, he's one of these spirits that gives me peace, gives me a sense of more spaciousness.
I love your intersection because, number one, I was so sad I couldn't make it to Durham in December when you were there. I was like, ah! But I remember just listening to the podcast with you and your sister, and it was Reverend Angel and Lama Rod, and I would take my little walk around the house in Finland, and it just felt like, you don't understand how nourished I was by conversations like that. It was, what is it, you know, how to be a prophet at the end of the world or being a prophetess. I don't know. I don't remember that.
It changed my life.
Oh, my goodness.
Conversation with him.
I remember the aha moment. You
heard it. around like, wait. Prophet means what?
Lama Rod talked about trauma and how you have to love your trauma, and you and Autumn were like, wait, what are
Hold
you
on,
talking
slow
about?
Down exactly multiple times. And he's like that, you know, whenever we talk, I feel like he's able to do that with a beautiful simplicity, actually, is to be like, well, actually this, and just like, spin it on its head, and which is what all of my favorite spiritual teachers do, you know, with me. Like whenever I talk with Prentice, I'm like, oh, that, yep, you're right. I accept that adjustment, right? And it makes me think of like acupunctural or chiropractic, you know. It's just like there's a specificity of like, let's get in here and like clip, and it's just like actually a totally different possibility.
Totally.
And that's saying that lineage.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I just need...
You can cut me off. It's your podcast. I want to hear what you have to say.
I want to hear what you have to say too. No, and I just have to call in, you know, the medicine of Sen Mori Soundararajan and the IG live you had with her when her book Trauma of Caste came out. It was... Yes. I just need to call her in because that conversation was powerful and the sort of witch... protection casting you did for her and what she's doing and the protection she absolutely need to hold her as a community. So I just absolutely have to call her in because she's another one who's a powerful spellcaster and liberator. Mm-hmm. So I just want to call in our girl Sen Mori.
I love that you called her in, and you know, there's such an interesting thing happening right now. What she did around Trauma of Caste and then Isabel Wilkerson's book Caste, now Ava has turned into the movie Origin.
Origin.
It feels like, oh, we're in the middle of, you know, there's everything is all at once. Yeah. But there's this shift happening that I'm so excited that Thaymori is a part of for how we understand race inside of a larger context and class and ability and all of it inside of this larger context. I do feel like, you know, this is an era or an age of great awakening and great collapse.
Absolutely.
And like all the changes feel large scale.
Absolutely. It feels like a constellation, and like the lights are just like ding, 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 you know, lighting up, and you're seeing how the threads interweave. You're seeing how, it's this great web, you know?
Yes. So, beautiful.
Suffering, but also this great web of potential liberation. So I just want to call in both pieces.
So then it's so great. In a given day. we knew it was going to be like this. So it's just,
we are going to have things to talk about. I am not worried.
So, what are the ways that you do your witch work, like in a given day?
Right.
What feel like the intentional practices, the intentional offers?
Beautiful. So now that I've identified that Ashtanga yoga is my root lineage, and now that I've, you know, practiced it enough that I don't feel the need to get on my mat and do a 90-minute hardcore asana practice 6 days a week, that just doesn't work for me. My practice will shift from day to day. I like to do things for my body energetically and somatically. Let's say maybe 3 to 4 times a week. That makes me feel good. Okay. Sometimes I'll go for a walk and sit and sing to the waves and talk to the water. Okay. I like to be in nature and keep it elemental, especially if I'm carrying a lot of grief. Sometimes my yoga mat doesn't feel big enough to contain it. And the house, the walls kind of cave in on me. So I have to go out into nature. Yes. And I have the good fortune of being in a very rural place in Portugal, which there's a whole lot that it doesn't have going for it. But what it does have going for it is nature, the elements. Yes. Like, you know, I can go and look at the sunset. I can look at the waves. I can look at the big blue sky. I can miss being in a like beautiful, active, fun, sexy city. But I do have that nature, and I can go and just remember that the ancestors are everywhere, that there are seen and unseen protective deities and beings and forces just waiting to help me, waiting to hold me, waiting to hold my grief, waiting for me to like surrender into the wonder of what it means to be alive. So I go and I talk with them, and I'll offer flowers to the water, and I'll sing to the water, and I'll, you know, back in October 7th, when it was really hot on social media and I couldn't go just because it was too much for my nervous system, I would go and offer flowers to the water and be like, there's the salt water. There's the tears that I can't shed because my nervous system is just totally disassociated and numb, you know, to witnessing what's happening, you know, to our siblings. So there's that, like, that's my practice. And this morning, I'll just give an example, you know, I had a beautiful practice at the yoga space, Miami Yoga Garage yesterday. I went very deep in my practice and it felt great. But today I decided I was going to do it different. So I let myself wake up with no alarm. I was very worried, you know, this is the longest I've been away from my children. So I woke up worried about them, like, oh my God, what if something happened to them? They're on a beach in Thailand. What if something happened and I'd be so far away? So I prayed, I called out to God and said, hey, I need your help. I need your help transmuting this worry. Help me, please. And I breathed. I opened the window. I let the fresh morning air in. Then I went to the garden in the house I'm staying and offered incense to the Ganesha statue that's in the garden. I felt the dew on my feet. I felt the morning sunlight.
Yes.
And I was told, you know, everything's going to be okay. Hand over the worry to me and let it transmute into trust and surrender. And then I called my kids, even if they don't want to talk to me because they miss me too much, at least I could see their sweet faces and know they're okay. That was my witchy morning practice of yoga. Just really moving through it, you know. And then I was, you know, just reflecting on how, you know, there's a price to pay for everything. You know, if you put your energy here, it has to be taken from somewhere else. So right now I'm just delighting in centering my needs, my self-care, in achieving my dreams and desires, one of which was to connect with you on your podcast and talk with you. Like, this has been many years coming.
Yes.
But what that means is that, yeah, I don't get to see my babies and, you know, kiss them on their necks every night like I do. So,
Well, and I especially feel like the work of mothers, the work of parents who are tuned in, right? Who are like, oh, there's a larger gift that I'm supposed to give that's not just about what I need to give my family. There's something that I'm also meant to give beyond my family. But my kids also need all of me. And I feel like I watch so many parents navigate that, like try to find the balance when you never can. Like it's kind of an impossible conundrum. And there's, you know, so there's, it's like, how do I create enough in a condition in which everything wants more of me?
That is the question. And I will just speak, like just speaking of motherhood, you know, there's the, as I learn about light feminine and dark feminine archetypical energies, you know, there's a lot of destruction that can happen when one's gifts are not able to express themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And how the container of the institution of motherhood, I'll say, it really can constrict and narrow these, let's say, wilder energies of the feminine divine as it expresses itself in me. And so mm-hmm. I just want to speak to that piece for anybody who's struggling with the deeper yearnings of their heart and how to express their gifts. So I'm feeling so deeply grateful to be able to have these avenues. And like I said, it's taken patience. It hasn't happened right away. And there were many days where I'm just yearning to connect and share and express. And it feels like, wow, this motherhood hat is, it can be kind of a little bit tight sometimes. So yeah, kids, Let's go to the beach.
Absolutely. Well, and I think there's, you know, sitting on the side of being a non-mother, non-parent, there's such a fascinating thing, which I've noticed, which is, I wish we lived in a world in which we valued children most of all. And that was actually the structure of the whole world.
When we
was
both. Like
valuing the children. My friend Janine Denovaj and I often flirt with the idea of collaboratively writing something about that world, you know, from a fiction and nonfiction standpoint, but because I do feel like, all the people in my life who are parents, I'm like, what you are doing is world building. You are co-creating the future through this person or these people that you are holding space for their becoming. And that's the same, you know, I was like, when I'm writing a book or when I'm doing a ritual or when I'm, you know, doing the work that I do, it's a different kind of co-creating of the world. But what I feel often is the kind of creating of the world that I'm doing gets valued in a certain way. Like, oh, wow. Like you wrote a book. And I'm like, I didn't push it out of my vagina. I didn't dedicate every single moment of my waking life for the rest of my life to being on call for the safety, protection, dignity, and care of another being. I took the, in some ways, the lighter path, right? Of like, I'm going to put out these ideas. Some people will read them. Some people will not. I'll never have to feed it. And if it disappears, fundamentally, everything will be okay, right? Ooh. And there's something about what it would look like if the world was shifted. So it was like, everyone writes books, only some people, you know, parent. And like that, I mean, everyone tries to play basketball. Some are really good. But the most valuable player is always the parent, right? Like, I just feel like that rearrangement to me would make so much more sense of so many things.
I'm getting emotional as you speak, because what you invited me to do is rest in the dignity and the importance of what it means to be a parent and a mother. So thank you for that. You're absolutely right that there's value, like we exalt, like, wow, a book, a published book, and I'm in that too. And so I tend to forget again the miraculous mundane of what it means to wake up and show up for your kids, even if you're tired and even if you're yearning for. So I just really appreciate you seeing me and acknowledging the importance of what it is I do as a mother.
Because I feel like so often I'm looking at parents and they're like, you know, I've been doing this thing for 10 years. I'm like, parenting? You've been like, I mean, to me, the spiritual practice of parenting is so, you know, it's all the things it's like when you get on a spiritual path, it's like, oh, there's sacrifice, there's repetition. Mm-hmm. Of practice, there's, you know, sitting in the mundane, there's I'm cleaning the floors, right? And parenting is like in if you look at it through that lens, it's the ultimate spiritual practice. And I feel like I've gotten to be close enough to several parenting practices that I've gotten to tap in and be like, okay, now I'm in my parenting mode and it is definitely my best self, right? Mm. Like when each of the babies were born, when my sister had her kids, when my goddesses have had their kids, and I would show up and be like, okay, now I elevate to this higher self that is, I'm awake when I want to be asleep. I am cooking when I want to be sitting. I am cleaning when I want to be cleaned. I am holding when I want to be held. I am, you know, and then I will step out of it, right? And it will continue to be the work of my friend or my sister. And so, yeah, anyway, it's a detour, but I'm just sort of like, parenting is the ultimate witchcraft. It's the ultimate spiritual practice. You know,
I so appreciate that. And just one final piece I want to say is that, you know, it kind of broke my heart. And there's a little anticipatory grief that I mm-hmm. you know, I felt as a parent, you know, seeing this being, this magical being that came through me. I remember when my firstborn, when I just became a mother, came onto this realm, and I looked at this just perfect being, I felt already anticipatory grief. Yes. As like, oh my God, like he's yes. in a
of the world
pale body, so what does that mean, you know, if he wants to keep identifying as that, what is that gonna mean, like what is my role and responsibility as a mother raising this male child, and then you know, now he's in, what is it? He's in third grade and he's being socially conditioned. And mm-hmm. my heart broke when he said, yeah, you know, you don't really do proper work at home. Daddy is the one who's doing the proper work, meaning going out and making the money. And I was like, all right, hold the phone. Like, I am not going to have what I do for you disrespected like this, young man. Like, that's this right. is not how I raised you to be. And so we that's had right. to have a whole like plenary discussion.
Well, it's also because there's a period of which, and I think this is where it's very much like what I'm trying to do with this podcast, actually, is to make the invisible visible, like to make the unseen yes. visible and valuable to people.
Absolutely. Because
I'm like, all the time, there are people who are casting spells for our general well-being. People mm-hmm. don't understand how many witches and spirit workers and shamans and healers Ooh. Are constantly conjuring up the best possible outcomes for all of us God. All the time, or for the earth all the time. And I'm like, you are constantly being prayed for and spell cast over, and like someone is operating on your behalf, whether you are aware of it or not aware of it, which is very much what parents are doing. It's like,
absolutely,
I don't want you to know everything I'm doing. I just want you to live inside of having enough and having a room to play and having what you need. But absolutely. At a certain point for your maturity, you do need to now be able to see the unseen, right? And I think part of why I wanted to do this podcast at this time was to say, I'm not going to demystify everything for you, because the mystification is actually really important for the work to be able to move. But I do want to shed a little light on the fact that this magic is happening all the time and all around you, and people are doing it that you wouldn't necessarily expect, and you should be grateful. You know, we should all be grateful that there are people out there who are just conjuring.
And it's the I love that. Thank you so much. I love that, you know, making the invisible a little bit visible, but not all the way.
Visible.
You
know? Yeah.
I love that so much. And it just speaks to the emotional labor
yes.
that is often unpaid,
yes.
but really what's making the world spin.
Yes.
And so when we are talking about the yoga, when we are talking about the practices, when we are talking about this energetic work, it's a real thing. It's a real thing. And I know I am, you know, my word for 2024, Adrian, is generosity. Ooh. Because there have been so many instances where I see I am the recipient of so much generosity, yes. Both in tangible and intangible ways, yes. both by people and the spirit world, human and beyond.
Yes.
And this is when we talk about like just remembering to remember just how generous life is for me in this moment. The breath, without my control, without me having any say so, is coming into my body, and that's me receiving yeah. life. okay, and now I'm going to give it back to the primordial lender, because, you know, this is not just like about taking, 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 receiving, receiving, receiving. Like, I have to pay my part as well. And so this is what I just, again, like just calling in my teacher, Lama Rod, speaks to this so much and gives a dignity to this unpaid emotional labor that really is the magic of what makes things, let's say, in balance, right? Because there's all kinds of spells being cast. There's the spells that are casting further suffering and confusion and, you know, all kinds of chaos. And then there's the spells that are working to bring things into balance.
Beloved survivors, it's autumn. Wow, I've been loving this witch season. I trust that you have too, because it's just excellent. I'm still on sabbatical for a few more months, but Adrian and I did just drop a new Patreon exclusive episode over at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. And it's a voice memo conversation that we recorded over the course of a few weeks. So if you love me and miss hearing my voice, if you love our show enough to listen to Adrian and I talk about new love, about aging, about roaches and utopias, you can head over to our Patreon and become a patron at any level. And you'll get immediate access to this most recent exclusive episode, as well as our collection of show merch, all of the Ask Us Anything episodes that we've made, all of it is yours. I miss you. Adrian and I thank you for your support. We love you. Yeah, and go to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow to check out all the juiciness. Okay, talk soon.
I'm constantly thinking about that. You know, we brought up October 7th, and I've been in this daily practice of how do I, in my own life, in my own spirit, in my own attention, share my breath with Palestine. How do I share my breath with the work of anti-Zionist Jewish people? How do I share my breath with Sudan? How do I share my breath with the Congo? What does it mean to be on earth and actually think of myself as only receiving a percentage of what it has to offer and letting that be enough and letting that be enough so that there's enough for everyone else to receive it? And then what are the interventions I have to make around that imbalance? Right. And there's different, I've been noticing, you know, like a lot of the people who we are seeing out of Palestine, I'm like, oh, you're casting a spell. Motaz cast a spell visually. Bisan cast a spell with her words. Like these are people who are casting spells. You know, Mosab cast spells with his poetry, right? There's people, Suher cast spells with her poetry. Like there's folks who are saying, I am going to shape the future, even if I might not get to live inside of it, because it's so important that I cast my spell as loud as I can. And then for those of us who are on the receiving end, who are like, okay, we're putting our bodies on the line, we're putting our actions on the line, we're putting our time on the line. Those are all spells. Those are all are all intention casting. But then inside myself, am I centering my Western life over the lives of all these other people, right? Because I, you know, you can't see what you can't see. And I think privilege is shaped to make it so that we can't see our privilege. And I feel like that a lot of the political awakening for myself and a lot of other people since October 7th, because I'm like, you know, a lot of us were paying attention before that, but there's been a different level of like, okay, like the people who are up to colonization are so not done. They think that they can continue doing that forever and ever. And so then those of us who are like, again, centering children, centering family, centering community, centering a relationship with the earth, centering connectivity and the fact that we do have everything we need, we have to be loud as well. We have to be even loud just with each other. You know, like I'm like, oh, I want to make sure, like there's zero personal relationships in my life where Gaza has not been picked up, held between us, looked at from every angle, right? Like, I'm like, we have dealt with it.
and we will continue to deal with it. And that feels as important to me as anything I'm doing in the public sphere, right?
That's so beautifully said. And it one thing I've been sharing, you know, in my meditation offerings, you know, just sort of behind, not so much on social media, right? But just with folks who want to gather an intentional community, is that, you know, this is a time where we must be strong.
Yes.
Where we must meet power with power. And I'm not talking about replicating the power of, you know, domination,
exactly,
of oppression, of not that, you know, we don't need more of that energy. What I'm talking about is we need to match the power we see in the world that is kind of like saying, you know, roll over, we're too powerful, don't even try. First of all, we're not going to believe that. Yeah. But it's saying like the power of, what is it you posted on one of your memes around how it is we return, you know, when we see a soulless world, what is that energy we need to return to the sacred? It's that essentially that love.
Seeing it as sacred until it can remember.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's that kind of intention behind the power that we need to come with, right? Mm-hmm. But it needs to be strong enough, maybe even stronger, to match that other kind of power we're seeing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So when we're saying like spiritual warfare is happening, it's real. It's happening on the energetic level, and it is happening on the tangible, visceral level. Like, we're seeing it.
Yes.
And we're also not seeing it, but we're certainly feeling it.
I think that's that thing, right? Is like, when I think about the fact that there's been a backlash against the very idea of being awakened, right?
Mm-hmm.
The very idea of being like, I am paying attention and I care about factual information and I care about being in a community of people who are responding to reality in real time. You know, the fact that we have that level of anti-intellectualism, that level of pushing against reality and staying asleep and staying ignorant and choosing to, you know, it feels so willful and cruel. Mm-hmm. So it's a fascinating time. It, you know, because it feels like, oh, we have to fight in the court system. We have to fight inside of corrupt systems that we know are dysfunctional. And we also have to be fighting at the spiritual level while also co-creating the networks and relationships and communities where trust flows and where the future flows. Because, you know, that's, I think that the collapse of so many of these systems is inevitable. And what will matter is who's ready to lead in the aftermath. And even now, we're already in some aftermath in some places. Like even now, right, there in a lot of the places where we're hearing about genocide, it's because genocide has been happening and there's already been so much loss. And the people we're hearing from are leaders who are like, we're still alive. There's still some future for us after this, you know? Okay.
That just speaks to the piece of centering the children.
I feel like this through line to me is like the witchcraft of centering children is the way, you know, I'm like, if people took nothing else from this whole season, it might be that piece. It's just like to live in a world as if the children are the most important part of it and not like, you know, I know people who are like, I don't get along with kids or what, you know, whatever, but it's like, the future is the most important thing, and the generation of that from a you know, because for me, I'm just like, oh, the better my present is, the better my future is. Like the more I feel like I have agency and sovereignty and in community and all those things.
Mm.
Now, because our conversation is so fascinating, we have come up against the edge of time for it. And that's beautiful, right? Because absolutely. I want to share this poem with you.
Before you do that, yes. Adrian.
Yes, my love.
I just take a moment. We are centering the children and we are centering Earth and the land as this conscious being.
Yes.
This witness. And I just want to do a land acknowledgement right now, calling in from the land of it's the Seminole, the Taino, the Mikko Suki, and then two other folks whose names are not at the tip of my tongue. But I just, again, want to take a moment to center, again, this land and earth as conscious being, and drawing energy and power from this conscious being who still lives and breathes with us amidst this moment. So,
and I love what you said earlier, that is always waiting, is always ready to partner with and protect and join with us. Yes. Yeah, there's so many more things, you know, that are coming up that I'm like trusting that we'll just have more conversations so that they
have another one. And if just the last question you had that we didn't touch you, what is touch into? What is one witchy thing that I would wish folks to do in this apocalypse? It's the power of prayer.
That's it.
Talking. It doesn't matter which team you ride with. It does not matter the name, but just talk, speak it to source and asking for help. Like, hey, I'm having a hard time. I need your help. Can you please help me? That to me is what I wish more folks would lean into.
You better handle this interview. So you're like sick ass, didn't even get all the questions. So I really appreciate that.
Well, that was such a beautiful question.
Even for me, I'm like, even in moments like this, I'm like, I have needed so much care. I lost last April, I lost a dear, dear friend of mine, and I've needed so much more care in the aftermath. Mm. Like literally the grief, if impacted my immune system, it impacted my capacity to think clearly. It impacted my faith in humanity. Mm. Like, I was so shaken on October 6th, you know, like I was already so shaken up in terms of so many aspects of my world. And then everything started happening with Gaza, which just took it further. And I've needed so much support to get through it, right? Mm. And I've been asking for help and like letting people take care of me and learning that is, you know, for my word for 2024 in a lot of ways is receiving. It's like receiving because so many people want to give me care and love. And I'm so resistant to it. You know, people are like, take turmeric. And I'm like, you don't know anything about me. I'm like, just receive medicine. Take some fucking turmeric. Like, you know, the people who love you are not guiding you astray. Like, you know, the people who are left in my close circle actually care about me. They're trying to offer me care. So the spell I want to offer to you is one of the last spells in Fables and Spells. And it felt so right when I went through and I was like, what's left? And future shaping spell is one of the spells that is left. And it's like, of course, future shaping spell for Wang Gui. So it says, what we will see in 20 years is what we shape. Right now, let's shape the future. We claim the power of our outrageous grief, our righteous anger, our responsibility for our precious lives, our interconnected individual and collective joy, and our impossible magic. We embrace our edges that they may teach us to grow in right relationship to the living world. Our human messiness, our weird and brilliant wonders, we know how to be in so many incredible ways. With these gifts, we can foment a revolutionary now that centers love, care, needs, creativity, and magic. We plant the seeds of radical honesty, vulnerability, authenticity, and the kindness that eases inevitable change. We will not settle. We will grow weirder and wilder, more interdependent for our liberation, for our liberation, for our liberation. Ashe.
Ashe. And so it is. And so it is. And so it is. Oh, Adrian.
What a dream. What a dream.
What a journey. And you know, listen. Let me just call in brother. Oh, you too. Let me call in brother Bayo Kamolafe because you know.
Oh yes, Bayo.
Touched upon grief, but you know, a good grief practice is where you maybe start with grief, but you end in gratitude, and that's where I'm sitting. Just calling in that very powerful witch of brother Bayo.
Brother Bayo has got some spells up in his face.
Ooh, does he?
I love that man. Yes. Okay. You covered all the bases. I want to say thank you to you, Wambui, for your miraculous time this day and for making time for this inside of this self-reclamation moment. I'm grateful to you.
I love and appreciate you so, Adrian. Thank you.
That's the echo. I hope people can feel the echo chambers of love that are happening. For everyone who's been listening, thank you. Thank you for tuning in and listening to the show. You can find us on Instagram at endoftheworldpc. Make a sustaining donation to our show at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. It means a lot to us. Shake these bones, shake these bones. Write reviews on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, or just wherever you are. Just tell people, I like this show, listen to it. We are produced and edited by the incomparable Zach Rosen. Love y'all. Bye.